Well, it's a very appropriate song as a segue into our lesson this morning. Have your Bibles open to Psalm 71, and we're going to be looking at a few ideas. We won't look at every verse in great detail, but we'll look at several ideas out of Psalm 71. If there are any visitors with us this morning, we're very encouraged by your presence. This has already been stated by Dale and others. We do hope and pray that if you have any questions about the way we do things at Monte Vista, that you'll let us know. If you have questions about the gospel, Jesus Christ, or the way of salvation, then we would be more than happy to talk to you about that as well. We'll set up a Bible study or have a conversation with you this very day. Now, Psalm 71 has a subtitle, and the subtitles are not original to the text. They have been added by editors, but I think it's a very appropriate subtitle as we get started this morning. It says, "The Prayer of an Old Man for Deliverance." We'll start here in verse 1 and read a few of them. "In Thee, O Lord, I have taken refuge. Let me never be ashamed. In Thy righteousness, deliver me and rescue me. Incline Thine ear to me and save me. Be Thou to me a rock of habitation to which I may continually come. Thou hast given commandment to save me, for Thou art my rock and my fortress." I think one of the problems that we have in our walk of faith is faithfulness. Staying faithful, that is. We may start out very, very well. We may start with a great deal of zeal and enthusiasm, but we lose our way somewhere in the process. I think other people, the problem is that they didn't start very faithful at all, and it took them a really, really long time to really get into understanding what it means to be one of God's people and to really live a life that's consistent with that. So Psalm 71, to me, is an encouragement to all of us, no matter what situation we're in, whether we've been faithful for a long time or faithful for only a small amount of time. It's an encouragement to me that we have the ability to stay faithful no matter what, and that we can be consistent, that we don't have to have a season in our lives where we look back and say, well, that was kind of my dark time. That was my low period in life. When you look at the man in Psalm 71, he talks about the way that from his youth, he was faithful to God. He believed, he trusted, and even now, when he's an old man, he still trusts in God. Don't dismiss yourself if you're a young person. Don't dismiss yourself from faithfulness by saying, there will always be time for it later. I'll always have time to study the Bible more when I get older. I'll always have time to amend my ways, to change the course of my life when I get older. There will be time for it later. Don't dismiss yourself. And don't listen to the expectations of the world when the world says young people are supposed to be rebellious. Young people are supposed to be unfaithful. Young people are supposed to flirt with every kind of activity, with their dreams. Don't listen to the world when they say that you have neither the ability nor chance going on your side of being a strong, faithful Christian. You can be a great Christian, because God's power is available to all of us at every season in life, there to help us along the way and to fill in the gaps. And that's why we're going to study Psalm 71 this morning. Because we want to be like the man of Psalm 71. We want to be like this man who can say in all honesty that from his youth all the way to his old age, God was his rock and his fortress. That God has been there for him and will always be there for him no matter what he encounters. Now, like I've already alluded to, what we can tell from the text based on verses like 9 or chapter or verse 5 is that he is an older man who's been faithful from his youth. And yet even with all these years of wisdom and experience, he still needs God. That's what I love about this. "I have taken refuge in Thee, O God. Let me never be ashamed. Be Thou my rock and my habitation, to which I may continually come." In spite of the fact that we all assume that age is going to bring more self-reliance, as in the older I am, the more I know, so the less I need God, most of the older Christians that I know think it's actually the opposite. Most older Christians I know comment on the older you get, the less you actually know. Not in the sense that we become forgetful or anything like that, but in the sense that the older we get, the more we realize the unfathomable depth of God's grace and the knowledge that accompanies that. When you're 20, you think you know everything, don't you? I've commented on this before, but I remember the first time I got to go into the adult class. When you graduate high school and you go out of the little classroom into the big classroom, you grow up, and you finally get to go to the adult classroom, and you're so excited to raise your hand and answer every single question because all these people in this room need to know what I know, the secrets that I have in my 18-year-old head. It doesn't take long, though, for you to realize that you really don't know all that much. And then you become a 30-year-old man and you realize you know even less than you did 10 years ago. But it's supposed to be that way. I think that for the person who believes in God, it's not about greater self-reliance as they get older, it's about greater God-reliance. It's about depending on God more and more as you start to see society change around you, as you see your own body begin to deteriorate, you realize it really is about God and not about me. It really is about trusting Him and depending on Him, not me always having all the answers for everything. It's okay to not have the answers. Contrary to what most of us tend to think or want from our golden years, this writer has actually seen tremendous troubles even as he gets older. When we think of retirement, what do we usually associate that with? Mesa? You notice Mitch isn't here, right? What do we normally think of when we kind of have the idea of retirement? First of all, retirement is an invention from the 20th century. Retirement didn't even exist up until just 100 years ago, maybe. That concept of you reach a point in your life where you're still relatively able-bodied, but you just stop working and start having fun, that's a 20th century invention. With retirement, we tend to think of a worry-free, leisure-oriented, comfortable life. And yet this man is in his graying years, and he's talking about all the people that are giving him trouble in this life. Why would he need a rock and a fortress? Why would he need a habitation? Why would he need salvation from God if his life was meant to be easy and leisure-oriented? And actually, it's the exact opposite for him. Even decades after his first acts of faith, he still desires to continually come before God because this life has too much trouble to handle by himself. Now notice in verses 5 and 6 as we move on through the text, in verses 5 and 6, "For thou art my hope," he says, "O Lord God, thou art my confidence from my youth. By thee I have been sustained from my birth. Thou art he who took me from my mother's womb. So my praise is continually before thee." Here we learn a few lessons from verses 5 and 6. I think the first thing that I see here is, "Thou art my hope, O Lord God." What are you hoping? And what kind of hope are we really talking about? I have my green socks on today. I hope the Oregon Ducks win a BCS national title this year. That's my hope. I hope we go somewhere good for lunch today. I hope the weather's going to be nice. It's October, and it's going to be like 95 degrees today. What have you people done to me? There's a lot of things that I hope in. But we're not talking about the flighty, empty kind of hope that we usually use that word in our culture. We're not hoping that God is there for us. When the writer says, "For you are my hope," he's saying, "I know that you'll be there for me. There is something steadfast about you, God. There's something about you that will always be there. and I can trust it. Honestly, I don't have a whole lot of trust in the things that I hope in this world. If I hope the weather's going to be nice, what kind of confidence do I really have in that? If I hope the Ducks will win a national title, what kind of hope do we have in the things of this world, the activities of this life, compared to the hope we have in a God who promises us salvation in the eternal realm? That's the hope. But the next thing I notice, thou hast been my hope, true, but thou hast also been my confidence from my youth. That is a very difficult statement for a young person to say. Now, he's an old man, and he can look back upon reflection on his life. But for a young man, if you are in the height of life, if you are in your peak years, it's very hard to say that your confidence is really in God, even in your youth. For most youths, your confidence is in your age, because you've got all your best years ahead of you. I mean, you're young. You're carefree. There's nothing wrong with your body. If you want to go climb a mountain, you can go climb a mountain. If you want to take some kind of ridiculous food challenge at a restaurant, you can take a ridiculous food challenge and eat 12 sliders. You're young. You can do anything. And there's confidence. We try to instill confidence in our kids. And that's not saying that's a bad thing. It's not a bad thing that we try to instill confidence. Hey, go out and play soccer. Go get good grades. Yes, have confidence. But is that your ultimate confidence? Is that your ultimate confidence? Because when everything's going right for you and you're a 30-year-old man and you are healthy and riding high, the last thing you're thinking about is, but really God is what sustains me. It's a challenge for young people. It really is. It is a challenge when you feel good and life is going well for you to really say, this is passing. God is eternal. This is temporary. God is going to be there for me forever. I will not be young for a whole lot longer. I will not be riding high for the rest of my life. I have to find something that's going to last a whole lot longer than this body of mine. And the writer of Psalm 71 can look back again upon reflection and say, even when I was young, you were my confidence. I wasn't confident in my youth. I wasn't confident in my strength. I wasn't confident in my wealth. I wasn't confident in my potential. I was confident in God. What are you confident in? It's hard. Prime of life and youth are fleeting. Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 10 brings out that point. They don't last forever. So you have to have something that's going to get you through this life when this life starts getting ugly. When this life starts getting tiresome. When there are mean people and bullies. When your body's not working the way you want it to. When the days start getting darker, you have to have something more than yourself. He also says his sustenance was from God. By thee I have been sustained from my birth. What kept him going was God. What kept him going was not his job. What kept him going was not his wealth. What kept him going was not the prospect of going on a vacation. You ever feel like you meet people who, like, the only thing they have going for them is, well, at least I've got vacation time coming up. There's always Cabo. It's like, what a sad life. That's the thing that's keeping you going. It's like I saw a t-shirt one time. He said there are only two seasons in life, football season and not football season. And it's like you are spending the other 8 months of the year sustained by the hope of, well, football season is only that long from now. Well, he says, from thee I have been sustained from birth. You have kept me going. You're the thing that motivates me. You're the reason I get up every morning, God. Thou art he who took me from my mother's womb. My praise is continually before thee. Even from the earliest time in my life, I know that you've been there for me. God holds us in his hands when we are in our most tender state. He holds us in his hands. He sees all the potential in us, the potential for good and the potential for righteousness. What are you doing with the life that he's given to you? Now in verse 7 he says, I have become a marvel to many, for thou art my strong refuge. And there's two ways to look at this. I think one way is, he's become a marvel to his peers who did not share his faith. They marvel that he would continue believing in God even when all these things have gone wrong for him. They marvel that he would continue to believe in a God who would allow him to suffer as he has. He's become a marvel, not in a good sense, but in the sense that people look at his life and go, why are you still faithful? You remember Job's wife? Job was a marvel to his wife. She said, why are you still faithful? Curse God and die. Job was a marvel to his wife. He was a marvel to his friends. They marveled that a man would continue to be faithful to God so steadfastly in spite of all the bad things that had happened to him. And we can become that also. We can become that. When people say things like, hey, that earthquake that happened, that natural disaster, that wildfire, that epidemic, how can you still believe in a God who would allow those things to happen? How can you still be Mr. Charlie Church and go on living life so comfortably knowing that your God allows bad things to happen to good people? I believe the statistic is, and I might be wrong now, this might be an old statistic, I believe the statistic, at least a few years ago, was that there are 10,000 people who die every single day of totally preventable diseases in Africa. Totally preventable conditions. Things like hunger or waterborne illnesses. 10,000 people die every single day from totally preventable conditions. And you want to believe in a God who allows that to happen? You've become a marvel to people. They marvel at how gullible you are. Now, there's another way, too, that we can become a marvel to people. And by the way, that's fine. That's fine. If people want to marvel at me because I believe in a God like that, it's their misinterpretation, not mine. It's their misinterpretation, not mine. But there's another way that we can become a marvel to others. We can become a righteous example to those. We can produce excitement and zeal in others for their own faith because they can see the way that we persevere through trial. They can see the way that we stay strong no matter what. When Satan hurls his fiery arrows at us, we keep our chins held high and our confidence in God. And in that regard, we can become a marvel to others as well. I've become a marvel to many, for thou art my strong refuge. The world looks at that and thinks it's ridiculous. Other believers look at it, and it motivates them to try harder. Let's look at a few lessons about old age. And here's where we're going to condense the psalm a little bit, because for the sake of time, we just can't look at every single verse in this really, really wonderful psalm, but we're going to look briefly at a few lessons about old age. And I'll warn you, some of the things the writer of Psalm 71 has to say are not very pretty. You could read Ecclesiastes 12 and you get the same sort of impression about old age, that old age is not roses. Old age is not sometimes what we think of it as our golden years, our retirement years. It is full of trials. And the writer of Psalm 71 is not going to sugarcoat it. He says in verse 9, do not cast me off in the time of old age. Do not forsake me when my strength fails. So one lesson about old age is that as we get older, we lose our strength. We become weaker. Having a proper perspective on the frailty of the body keeps our spirits in check though. We tend to be less concerned about getting older when we're young, though. When you're really young, you just don't see old age as being that imminent a problem. The specter of old age is very, very far off for you when you're in the prime of life. For the writer of Psalm 71, he feels the icy grip coming, though. And he knows his strength is failing. He can't do what he used to do. He can't handle what he used to handle. He's not as strong as he once was, and he's having to come to grips with that. How we live as young people sets us on a course for the rest of our lives and determines, at least in part, our perspective on life as an elderly person. I do wonder about the way that young people run their bodies so hard without seeming to think that there will be consequences on down the road. We run our bodies in our culture so hard, so fast. We eat what we want, do what we want, play whatever sport we want, to the detriment of our bodies 20, 30, 40 years on down the road. I think there's a lot of things that young people are going to regret later on. And that's even things that are relatively innocent. Without saying anything about the effects of alcohol, drugs, or a sexually promiscuous lifestyle? You think you're not going to have to pay for that stuff later? Old age does bring weakness and a loss of the virility and the strength that we once had. And I think this is hard even for Christians. The hardest thing that I see out of elderly Christians is that tipping point, and we probably all witness it. There's a tipping point where when you used to help people, you used to help people and you never required help before. You were the one driving people to worship. You were the one preparing meals for those who were homebound. You were the one visiting people in the hospital. But as you get older, you hit that tipping point. And then you become the one being visited. You become the one receiving the charity. You become the one who needs help. A lot of people don't handle that very well. We need to learn to be compassionate and sensitive to those who are at that tipping point, because we're all going to meet that spot also. We're all going to be there too, one of these days. Troubles don't go away as you get older either. Notice in verses 10 and 11, "For my enemies have spoken against me, and those who watch for my life have consulted together, saying, 'God has forsaken him.'" You'd think that as he would get older, he'd have fewer enemies, that life would get a little smoother. Like we alluded to earlier, these are his golden years. Isn't it supposed to be smooth sailing from here on out? Isn't he supposed to be like working on his short game? And yet here he is as an old man, and he still has enemies. He still has troubles. There are people looking out for him, trying to defeat him, trying to destroy him. And I would say that some of our challenges even get worse as we get older. One writer put it very well in a commentary in the book of Psalms. The writer says of this fallacy that life gets easier as you get older, he said, "The speaker might have expected mature age to bring exemption from such attacks, but such is not the case." The lesson, therefore, is that I must continue growing. If I stop growing in my faith because I assume that the challenges are going to go away, I will be dead wrong. Even when I'm old and gray, I still have to be sharp. I still have to have my wits about me. I still have to be prepared for temptation from Satan. I still have to be prepared for people of the world who want to tear me down. I cannot let my guard down no matter how old I get. A third lesson about old age is being alone. In verse 11, they've consulted together saying, "God has forsaken me. Pursue and seize him, for there is no one to deliver him." His enemies looked at the writer and said, "He's alone. He has nobody. There is nobody who's following him, nobody around him, nobody defending him." And old age can become a very lonely time. I was talking to an older member of our congregation back in Abilene. Jody knows her. knew her, Althea. And Althea passed away a couple years ago. Really wonderful example, great Christian lady. And I used to go visit her. But there was a sadness about her. Even if she found the positive spin on life, there was a melancholy that she would talk about sometimes. She would say, I love it when you come visit me, Ryan. I love our conversations. I love all the young members of our congregation. And I love that there are little babies and toddlers. I love that there is hope for the future and that there are young Christians out there. But she said, Ryan, getting old is very lonely. Because all the people who were your peers, all the people who knew what you went through when you were young, all the people who come from the same perspective as you, they're dying off as well. And eventually you find yourself surrounded by young people who don't understand you. And that's a fact. It becomes a very lonely time in life. Yet, one writer said, the reflections David gives us concerning old age are not so that we will wring our hands and complain about how bad it is to grow old. Because how can we end a lesson talking about the bad side of growing old without saying that there are some positive solutions as well? To the contrary, the writer says, David wants us to see that even old age is given to us by God, is one of His good gifts, and should be used for His glory and the blessing and well-being of others. He gets into these points first by pausing to look back over his long life and reflect on what he has learned about God. We have spoken about the problems of old age, he says, which are great, but one great advantage is in having a long experience of God's presence, faithfulness, and blessing. And I think when you look at it like that, you really do see that there's a blessing there. I have known God as a Christian for about 17 years. And I envy those who've known God personally for 40 years. 50 years or longer. I know the body deteriorates. That's a fact. You can't avoid it. You can't make it go away. But there is a treasure to be found in knowing God for that long. Being God's friend, being God's companion, and being God's saint, His ambassador in this world, preaching the gospel for that long. That's a blessing too. Some positive things to remember about growing older is teaching the next generation of Christians, because our greatest legacy is teaching others about our faith. He says in verse 18 of Psalm 71, even when I am old and gray, O God, do not forsake me until I declare thy strength to this generation, thy power to all who are to come. Basically what he's saying is, don't forsake me until I've had a chance to tell others about you. Even when he's getting older, the thing that's on his mind is making sure that other people know that God is awesome. Yeah, the body falls apart. He gets it. He can't get around that. But as long as he still has breath in his lungs, the writer of Psalm 71 is going to declare the wondrous works of God to the younger generation. Please, elderly Christians, do that for us. Declare the works of God to us. Tell us about how great God has been in your life. Look at the kids. Look at the teenagers. Look at me, your ridiculous 30-year-old preacher. And tell me that God has been good to you for 50 years. And that I have that to look forward to in my walk of faith. The writer says, I want to declare your strength and your power to this generation. That's your legacy. One writer said, the present does not mean much to them except as a basis for complaining about their multiplying aches and pains. He says of those who look back on the good old days, older folks who become bitter about the way their life has turned out. For David's approach to old age was not like this, though. For not only did he look to the past to remember God's goodness and faithfulness to him over his many years, but he also looked to the future in terms of the work yet remaining to be done. And that's encouraging also to remember that there is a great work to be done. If you think that your best years are behind you, your greatest task is still here. Because for everything that an older Christian has accomplished up until now, you know what the greatest task left to be done is? Teaching these kids right here. Teaching these kids. No matter what you've done as a Christian up until now, your greatest task is right now. And that's a blessing. The blessings of the present. In verse 17, he says, "And I still declare thy wondrous deeds." I like that he says, "I still declare." Not, "I'm not declaring things that you used to do for me back in the good old days." He's not concerned about the stuff that God has done for him. He says, "I still declare thy wondrous deeds." The past may be a reminder of what God has done for us at one time, but exulting in the blessings of today is a reminder that the Father is still working now to bring peace and salvation to the Christian soul. The psalmist is going to continually look on. He's not looking at the good old days. He's looking at what is ahead of him still. And the last point that we'll make this morning, the last positive solution that we see here in Psalm 71 for the problem and blessing of old age is in verse 20. "Thou who hast shown me many troubles and distresses wilt revive me again." The lesson is that this will work out too. Notice the power of the word "again" in verse 20. "Thou wilt revive me again." Here is the aged saint, the old believer in God, still in the fight, still surrounded by his enemies, his problems, his ailments, his trials and tribulations, and yet confidently knowing that God will deliver him again. If God has been good to you, and he surely has been good to all of us, why would we believe he would stop loving us and stop forgiving us and stop uplifting us when we need him most? Why would we lose confidence in God if he's been good to us up until now? If he has given us such rich gifts as forgiveness and salvation through his Son, why would we lose confidence when we're so close to the end of the journey? "Thou wilt revive me again," he says. "This will work out. Just as you've been with me up until now, God, you're going to help me get through this one as well." Old age gives us that perspective. Younger Christians don't always have that perspective. Sometimes we wonder, where is God? We sometimes wonder, how can we believe in a God who allows these things to happen to us, who allows us to go through the troubles of this life as he does? The older Christian chimes in and says, "You don't know nothing yet." The older Christian chimes in and reminds us, when you've had some perspective and you see that things do work out, then we'll talk about how faithful God is. I think what God requires of us is a little faithfulness of our own. A little faithfulness of our own. We need to trust that things will work out. We need to trust that he's in control. The God who spoke the universe into existence surely does care about our trials and our troubles, just as he cares about blessing us and caring for us. And we need to trust that there is a perspective greater than us out there. Now, maybe there's some things in Psalm 71 that might have hit you a little close to home. I can't apologize for what the writer of Psalm 71 says, because this is his own words. This is an old man. This is an old man whose body is deteriorating, who sees the end of his life coming. And yet he knows that in a short time he will be renewed. In a short time, he will meet his God face to face, his rock, his habitation, and his salvation. He'll leave the gray behind and replace it with colors too bright for this creation. Now, if you're not a Christian here this morning, you really ought to be. Now is your opportunity to take advantage of the call of the gospel, summed up very nicely in Mark 16, verse 16. "He who believes and is baptized shall be saved." So if you're not a Christian, it's time to obey the call. Please, come forward as we stand and sing. Thank you.